You can get the latest odds, offers and more great content at williamhill.com, on the William Hill app and in any of our shops around the UK. Whoa! The Punt Podcast, in association with the FWA.
Genuinely wants to spend the rest of his career at Tottenham Hotspur. I think he's mad.
I'm sorry, how can he escape flash? It's unbelievable.
So this is an obvious snap. It's a team in great form at home against a team who just aren't that good.
I think he'll score some goals in League One in 17-10 any time. Deadly from set pieces and in the air.
Up for manager of the month. They've been phenomenal. They're odds against. Love it, love it, love it.
Subscribe to The Punt on iTunes, listen on Audio Boom, or look out for the link on Twitter or on William Hill's Facebook page.
Hello everyone, a warm welcome along to the Punt Podcast here with William Hill. Good to have your company ahead of a new Premier League weekend. Dave Kellner here in the studio. We've got Derek McGovern with us to preview the five live televised games in the top flight in just a few moments' time. We'll also be hearing from Craig Hope, the North East football correspondent for the Daily Mail. He's going to talk Newcastle after their first win last weekend, and we'll have a reflection on the Champions League as well. But first of all, it's a good afternoon to the man who is tasked with providing you with winners this weekend, David McGovern. Good afternoon to you, sir.
Good afternoon, Dave. A task I will yet again find easy.
I have the utmost faith in you, Derek. Let's get stuck into it. Straight stuck into it then. Five TV games. We start with the Saturday lunchtime kickoff, Cardiff versus Brighton. A 12:30 kickoff this one. Cardiff 31-20. The draw 21-10. Brighton in the betting at 2-1. Enhanced odds, Callum Patterson to score and Cardiff to win was 4-1. That's been enhanced to 9-2. And if you think Glenn Murray is going to score in a Brighton win, that was 17-5. That's been boosted to 15-4. Unfortunately, we've not been able to get Andy Excel, William Hill's Andy Excel, on with us this weekend. And I think, Derek, he knew this was the first game of the weekend, and that's why he's missing this podcast. Because this is a bit of a shocker to kick things off. I think there's value in the game, but it's one for the purists, shall we say. Cardiff only have Fulham below them after that 1-0 defeat against Leicester City last weekend. That came on the back of their 4-1 loss at Anfield. And Brighton are 9 points above Cardiff, with their string of 1-0 wins being halted by Everton at Goodison last Saturday. What do we make to this game, Mr. McGovern?
Well, I look at those odds for Brighton, 2-1, to beat an absolutely useless Cardiff side, and I can't believe those odds. Then again, I don't believe anything I say, Dave, and I say that as a handsome Lothario who knows what he's talking about. I just think Brighton are certain teams here. You look at Cardiff's record. I'll take that 4-2 win over Fulham out of the equation, and I'm thinking that Fulham are just lousy. I think they'd lost something like 8 games on the spin and scored about a couple of goals in those 8 games. That 4-2 win over Fulham skews all their statistics in their favour. They're a poor side going nowhere but down to the Championship. And you look at Brighton, I mean, their record recently has been fantastic. Mm. Yeah, they're not winning games commandingly, but they're getting games won. They're a tidy Premier League side now, Brighton. I didn't think I'd ever say that. And I think at 2-1, I think they're absolutely nailed on.
Yeah, and if you're looking at a Brighton win, I mentioned Glenn Murray. Only Eden Hazard, Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang and Sergio Aguero have scored more Premier League goals than him this season. So Glenn Murray to score in a Brighton win, 15-4, just a shade under 4-1. I do like the look of that, and Cardiff haven't kept a clean sheet in their last 8 Premier League games either. They've let in 22 in that spell, losing 7 of those matches. And with you, Derek, I think Brighton at 2-1 looks good, and I do like that enhancement as well for Glenn Murray to score and Brighton to win, just a shade under 4-1 at 15-4. Let's move on to Palace versus Spurs then, Derek. 5:30 kickoff on Saturday, this one. Crystal Palace 17-5 to win it. The draw 27-10. Spurs 78-100. So a shade of odds on Tottenham Hotspur. Enhanced odds, Wilfred Zaha to score in a Palace win was 13-2. That's been boosted to 15-2. And Harry Kane to score in a Spurs win was 4-1. That's been enhanced to 9-2. I thought Palace, Derek, acquitted themselves pretty well last week against Chelsea, but they were still beaten 3-1, and they haven't won a Premier League game since mid-September now. And with that international break coming up, there's definitely the prospect of some managerial changes. I haven't seen that many suggesting Roy Hodgson is under pressure yet, Derek, apart from yourself.
Well, it baffles me. I can't remember a manager that gets such an easy ride with such an absolutely awful record that guy has. I think if Palace are lucky, because there are some rank bad teams in this division. There's two right at the bottom. Now we're talking about Palace could yet fill that third spot from the bottom. They shouldn't. You look at the squad they've got. They shouldn't. They should be doing an awful lot better. The fact that they're not is down to one man. The Hodgesaurus. I'm sorry, I'm just not having them. I look at these prices, you know. I know if Andy was here, he'd be saying it's the job of bookies pricing up a match to frame odds that will attract support for both sides. But all the money in this game will go on Spurs at those odds. Or when I say all the money, I mean all my money, Dave, which of course isn't much. It also isn't mine, by the way. But I've just got to think, you know, Spurs are getting a lot of stick from some of them are their own fans, but fans generally. And yet you look where they are in the league, the best start they've ever had in the Premier League. They've hardly played a home game this season. 4 matches at home, 7 away, I think it is. And those matches at home are not really at home. They're at Wembley. you know, I think there's still a tidy set. Okay, they maybe not be as easy on the eye as they were last season. But I think they're absolutely nailed on. It's pretty much 4-5, those odds, you know, these ridiculous odds that you're getting at the moment, 78-100, pretty much 4-5. It's nailed on.
There's an interesting stat here as well, Derek. 25 of the last 26 goals scored in the Premier League in games between these two sides have been scored in the second half. There's only been one first half goal in the last 14 meetings between the two. So read into that what you will. Maybe have a look at draw half time Spurs full time, which is available at 4-1. I'm surprised at you though, Derek, because despite winning 3-2 against Wolves last week, I thought Spurs were slightly fortunate, and it took a late Harry Kane show to keep them just about in the Champions League midweek as well. But you've got some positivity about Spurs, or is it mainly that negativity towards Hodgson?
Mainly that, yeah. But Spurs, as I say, they're not flying like they were on occasions last season. They're definitely not. But now they're Liverpool. But both teams are getting results. And you know, you look at Palace. These are some of the teams Palace have played at home recently: Wolves, Newcastle, Southampton. They couldn't beat any of them. In fact, I don't think they scored a goal against any of those three sides. Why is it going to be any difference against Spurs? It won't be.
It's a big surprise to me to see one of the form dogs in Ligue 1 priced up so generously over the weekend. The title race was arguably over before a ball had been kicked, and it's no real surprise to see PSG have opened up an 11-point lead at the summit already. But the race for second is much more intriguing, and it's in that race for second where my nap comes this week. The race is currently being led by Montpellier at the moment, who've really got the bit between their teeth just now. They've only lost once all season, and coming into this one with 4 wins from their last 5, keeping clean sheets in all 4 of those wins, and their backline has really been one of the real assets to them this season. They've only shipped 7 goals so far this campaign. That's the same number as PSG. Everyone else in the league has conceded double digits already. So really, there's no real reason for them to be 6-4 away at Angers this weekend. The hosts are winless in their last 6 in all competition, having lost 4 of those, including defeats at home to the bottom side in the league in Guingamp a few weeks ago. They drew a blank in that one, so I'd be hopeful that an outfit with designs on a European place, such as Montpellier, can keep them out too. I'm passing up the 6-4 this weekend and going greedy. Montpellier to win to nil at 14-5, the nap this week. With wins to nil against Nîmes, Toulouse, Bordeaux and Marseille in recent weeks, I really like their chances of repeating the dose on Saturday night.
Okay, on to Sunday's games then, Derek. We've got Liverpool versus Fulham. Midday kickoff this one. Liverpool 1-10. The draw 10-1, Fulham 20-1 to win this game. Enhanced odds, Roberto Firmino to score, Liverpool to win 2-0, 2-1 or 3-1 was 13-2. That's been enhanced to 15-2. And Alexander Mitrovic to score and Fulham to win was 40-1. That's been boosted out to 50-1 now. Was that 2-0 defeat midweek in Serbia, Derek, against Red Star Belgrade, was that just a blip, or is that the precursor to a rough time ahead for Liverpool?
No, it wasn't a blip. That result has been coming. Well, we had a similar one in the Napoli game earlier in the season, although that was more forgivable because it was Napoli, not Red Star Belgrade, who Liverpool had outclassed at Anfield a few weeks earlier. Liverpool haven't played well at all this season. No, I can't remember a single game where I've come away thinking, yes, you know, maybe the West Ham game at the opening day, on the opening day. But they've been really, really poor. Players who were given 8 out of 10 last week at every game are now struggling to make 4 out of 10. Firmino is the catalyst for everything. Everything Liverpool do good. He's been awful this season. And don't get me started on the Egyptian clown. I mean, it's just... I think Liverpool have been desperately lucky that they've had Virgil van Dijk in the side this season, because he's the reason they've been getting these grubby wins that Liverpool could never get.
Yeah,
he was found wanting in midweek, and look what happened. Jurgen Klopp, the Liverpool manager, he gets a very easy ride. You look at the stick Tottenham have had this season for not hitting the heights. Well, Liverpool have been worse than Tottenham. And yet, you know, Klopp gets, you know, he's a media darling, whereas Pochettino's getting all kinds of flack. Some of the decisions Klopp has made this season have baffled me, particularly in these European away matches. Now, people might say, well, come on, don't be ridiculous. They're the only team keeping tabs on Man City at the top. They're still in with a chance of qualifying, you know, for the last stages of the knockout stages of the Champions League. But Liverpool have turned from the most attractive side in the Premier League last term to probably the most boring. I don't want to watch Liverpool at the moment. This is why probably their defensive record is a lot better, because they're hardly going forward now. This is not the Liverpool of last season, and yet nobody seems to recognise it.
It was interesting as well, Derek, that Roberto Firmino was dropped midweek, left out of the starting lineup on Tuesday night. I wonder if he'll be back or whether Jordan Shaqiri might start on Sunday afternoon. The good thing for Liverpool here is, Derek, they're playing Fulham. Slavisa Jokanovic is under serious pressure. They've only picked up 5 points all season long, Fulham. And Liverpool are unbeaten in their last 26 Premier League games at Anfield as well. 20-1 Fulham, is that tempting you at all?
Well, I just wish it wasn't Fulham that was playing Liverpool. I wish it was a side, let me see, a Southampton even.
No,
you might
Derek.
Give a chance to. Maybe not Southampton, that's probably a Bournemouth. Let's say it was a Bournemouth or a West Ham. West Ham, a different West Ham than what we saw at Anfield earlier in the season. I'd give them a squeak, a definite squeak. It wouldn't be as big as 20-1, obviously, but Liverpool are there for the taking right now. They'll turn up at Anfield on Saturday, and there'll be a lot of jitters about what's been happening recently. And you know, you talk about them being unbeaten in the league. Well, they played the three big teams that have taken points off them: Arsenal, Chelsea, and I can't remember who else it was. They drew all those games, Liverpool, and yet they were outclassed in each of them. And that wasn't happening last term. Fulham aren't good enough to go to Anfield and get anything, not in the current form. The manager's on his way out, isn't he? I mean, they let Cardiff score 4 past them recently. Even worse, they let Huddersfield score 1 past them. there was talk at the start of the season that they could finish in the top 10. Well, the only chance of that is if they release a single, because they're absolutely going nowhere right now. Liverpool will win, but you don't need me to tell you that when their odds of what are they? 1 to 20, are they? 1 to 10?
Yeah, 1 to 10.
Yeah, it's just, no. What can you say about this? I mean, let me just go back onto Salah, Dave. We've talked about Salah all last team. Have your views on him changed?
I think he's been subdued at the start of the season. I did think last season could have been a real... I don't know if you can have a purple patch for the best part of 8 months, but... I didn't think he'd hit the heights of last season, this season, and it's taken him more than a while to get going so far.
Well, we're in mid-November now, and he hasn't had a kick all season. He had a stellar season last term. This term he looks like he's been drinking too much of it. You know, and one thing that annoys Liverpool fans, he's still taking the corners. The messes he's made, the mess he makes of corners, he's still taking them. Mm. The only thing I want him to take right now is a sabbatical, because he's just being a joke, and it's absolutely no surprise to me. I'm actually getting some people now, people I had massive arguments with last season about Salah. One or two of them, I mean, most of them are still not backing down, but one or two are coming around to my way of thinking. He's probably the most overrated footballer in the history of football.
Are you going Liverpool here? But are you going Liverpool to win both teams
Liverpool
to score? What are you
Liverpool
going for?
To win. Liverpool 2-0.
Liverpool to win 2-0, 13-2 in the market here with William Hill. Let's move on to Chelsea versus Everton. This is the 2:15 kick-off on Sunday. Chelsea 42-100. The draw is 4-1. Everton 6-1. Enhanced odds, Eden Hazard to score and Chelsea to win and both teams to score was 16-5. That's been boosted to 4-1. Richarlison to score, Everton to win and both teams to score was 11-1. Enhanced to 14-1. This is hashtag your odds as ever, so if you've got a bet that's not on the William Hill website but you want it priced up, do tweet using the hashtag your odds to @WilliamHill and we'll put that on the website and on the app. Derek, as far as I'm concerned, Mauricio Sarri is a bona fide miracle worker, because as well as coaching Ross Barkley how to play football again, he's managed to get a few goals out of Alvaro Morata, which I thought was an impossible task. He got two in last week's win at home against Palace, should have had a hat-trick. He can do no wrong as far as I'm concerned, this Chelsea manager.
Yeah, he's doing well without question. You wouldn't say that they were particularly impressive against Palace last week, were they? But they're not doing that much wrong. You look at some of the results recently. You know, they're in action on the Thursday night, of course, which won't help. But it's hard to make a case for Everton. But then you look closely at Everton's recent results, and in particular the performances. I was writing them off early in the season. I thought I liked the manager Silva, but I thought he had a big, big job on his hands there at Goodison. He seems to be getting the tune out of them right now. Mm. They have had an incredibly easy fixture list, Everton. They have to be said. You look back at it, you know, I think 11 fixtures in the Premier League. And, you know, you couldn't have wished for an easier programme in the first quarter of the season. But they've scored, you know, in every away match bar one. That was a game at Arsenal. There's something about Everton that, away from home, I like the look of. And I've got a feeling that I don't think they'll beat Chelsea, because Chelsea are too good a side. But I think Everton will run them close. So I'm toying with Abe that they're going with Everton with a two-goal start or both teams to score. I might go with the latter, because I'm pretty sure that will happen.
8-11 it is for both teams to score in the game. If you do think this is going to be goal-filled, over 3.5 goals in the game is available at 13-10. I think Everton do definitely pose a threat here. Richarlison is a superb player, and he could definitely trouble that Chelsea backline. If you're looking at maybe what we used to call a lose cast, Richarlison to score in a Chelsea win could be of interest here. That's 6-1, Richarlison to score any time and Chelsea to win the game. And if you fancy Chelsea to win and both teams to score in the match, that is available at 13-8. Everton do have a dismal record in away games in London. They've lost, or they've only won one of their last 16. They've lost their last four in a row, all during this calendar year as well. So Chelsea, odds on 42-100. The draw 4-1 with Everton 6-1. Big game this weekend, Derek. Manchester City versus Manchester United. Last of the televised games. 4:30 kickoff on Sunday. Manchester City 42-100. The draw 19-5 with Manchester United 6-1. The enhanced odds, Sergio Aguero to score in a City 2-0, 2-1 or 3-1 win. That was 9-2. That's been boosted to 5-1. And if you fancy Anthony Martial to score in a Manchester United win, was 12-1. That's been boosted to 14-1. Derek, just before you came on the line here, I had a quick word with Andy Excel. And Manchester United are his nap selection this weekend. He thinks they are the biggest price they've ever been in the Premier League at 6-1 this weekend, and he's with them. I can't have it, Derek.
No.
Even at 6-1.
No, not even after. You know, have they changed? You know, since the Juventus result, were they bigger early in the week? I can't imagine they'd have been bigger than that.
No, I've no idea. I presume they've been clipped in a little bit following that. I didn't check the prices, to be honest, before the game on Wednesday night, Derek. But I presume they've been clipped in a little bit.
Yeah, I don't really know where Andy's coming from. I mean, okay, it might be the biggest price they've been in the Premier League history, but there are reasons for that. Firstly, it's probably the poorest United team of the Premier League era. And secondly, they're away at Manchester City. You know, that's why it's 6-1. That said, they do have a good record in the Manchester Derby in recent seasons. I think they've won more of the last 12. I think they've won 4 compared to City's winning only 2, which is quite remarkable, really. This is an amazing game because you've got Liverpool fans supporting United in this one. I never thought that would happen. I don't know what it is. United, I look at them and I don't see a team, and yet they keep getting wins. You've got a worse track record of falling behind than my last 228 bets at the Cheltenham Festival, United. But they keep getting the results. And that game, I watched the game against Juventus on Wednesday night, and I took my eyes off it most of the time because it just looked like a walk in the park with Juventus. I thought, you know, they went 1-0 up and thought, yeah, they might close the game out, they might get another one. But, you know, United, the history. Next time I look, it's 2-1. I don't know how that happened. I really don't. And, you know, isn't it typical of Mourinho that what should have been a night of jubilation for him, it all revolves around him and the antics he got up to going onto the pitch. You know, I mean, he's complained for a while now that journalists are showing a lack of respect towards him. What really annoyed him was when I asked him for that bread and olive starter. That really got his goat. I can't have Mourinho, and I'm not getting fooled by United pulling victory out of the jaws of defeat. There's still an ordinary side in my eyes. They shouldn't be with the players they've got, you know, the likes of Pogba and Mata. But they are, and he's responsible. And I've got a feeling that City, I've got a feeling that they'll wallop them this weekend. I'm going for City minus a goal because I think it will be a walk in the park with them.
I can see that as well, Derek. If you're looking at City minus one on the handicap market, that is just still a shade of odds on, Derek. 10-11 City minus one in the match. They've scored at least 5 goals 5 times this season already. They're coming into this derby having thrashed Southampton 6-1 last weekend and Shakhtar Donetsk 6-0 on Wednesday night. I think they'll be spurred on as well, Derek, for this match because the reverse fixture, that was a bolt from the blue last season, wasn't it, when United went there and won?
Well, that was the game when City was 2-0 up and it could have been about 8-0 up. It was the most one-sided game we've ever seen, and in the second half it was, I don't know what happened. You know, typical United, what they did that day, they've done for most of this season. But they're playing City now, and City are... I can't remember a Manchester derby. Well, I can actually. I was about to say I can't remember a Manchester derby where one side is so superior. I can often, but Man United were always the superior side. This is the first time City have been streets ahead of them. That's reflected in the odds, obviously. But I really don't understand where Monsieur XL is coming from in going for United. Yes, 6-1, they've never been that big. But they've never had less of a chance of winning a game than this one.
OK, we've got Andy's Knapp, Manchester United at 6-1. Derek, what are you going with?
There's one Knapp. I mean, I feel like getting together every last red cent I've got. Because this one will win. This is a certainty, this. West Ham, 13-10 to win at Huddersfield. I mean, it can't possibly not win.
Huddersfield are coming into this on the back of their first win this season, though, Derek.
Yeah, you see, it was against Fulham. Yeah, and I know, you know what, Liverpool fans, when Huddersfield ran Liverpool close a few weeks ago in that dreadful game on the Saturday, Liverpool fans are saying, oh, you know, Huddersfield had a good season. You know, they do anything to deny that Liverpool had a bad night. Liverpool were awful that night. That's why Huddersfield ran them close. Huddersfield are a bad side. Not as bad as Cardiff. Obviously not as bad as Fulham. But they're a bad side. And West Ham are not. West Ham will win this.
We'll have an away day treble on the podcast then because I'm going with Watford to beat Southampton 2-1.
Yeah, that was up there. Yeah,
and
I like that one.
I think this could be the swan song for Mark Hughes as well. My prediction is Watford go to Southampton, win, and he's next on the chopping block before the international break and they get someone new in. So I'm going Watford to win and Southampton to sack Mark Hughes I'd have that in a double, I think.
good one.
That treble, by the way, just under 50-1, 47.3-1. Manchester United 6-1, West Ham 13-10, Watford in the betting at 2-1. Derek, thank you for your company.
Pleasure.
I'll be speaking to the North East football correspondent from the Daily Mail, Craig Hope, on the back of this.
Now at William Hill, you can get your bet onto the website for featured matches. If there's a bet you fancy that's not on the app, just tweet with the hashtag #YourOdds to @WilliamHill and the traders will try to price it up. Hashtag #YourOdds from William Hill.
Now, it's a pleasure to be joined by the North East football correspondent for the Daily Mail. Craig Hope is on the line right now. First of all, a good afternoon to you, Craig. A warm welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, Dave.
Craig, we've got to start by talking about Newcastle. You're very closely involved with the football club from a reporting perspective, and they got the first win last weekend against Watford. Which has, I think, relieved a little bit of pressure, and there's now a bit more cause for optimism in Newcastle.
Well, there is. It's remarkable that you can win one game in 11 and you find yourself out of the bottom three. I've been doing a little bit of research, and in any of the past 10 seasons, Newcastle United start would have them still in the relegation zone. So they've been lucky that there are three teams who have managed somehow in the opening 11 matches to be worse than they have been. The projected, would you believe it, the projected points total for survival at the moment, I mean, doing a few sums, is 21, which is quite incredible, really. So, yeah, listen, it was a relief. You used that word there. Rafa Benitez was a little bit reluctant to use the word afterwards, because I think he feels his win has been coming all season, really, and they've been unlucky rather than poor. I think the truth probably lies somewhere in between, but on the flip side of the coin, I thought they were damn lucky on Saturday. The first half against Watford, it really was men v boys. I think I noted in my Daily Mail match report that it was almost like watching senior side take on the under-23, so superior to Watford in terms of, they were just, it's just when you watch a football match and you think, wow, one side is just bigger, better, stronger, quicker, better on the ball, and it was a travesty really how the first half expired goalless. But then going into the second half, Newcastle had the stroke of luck they've been missing all season, and it was a perverse stroke of luck, and it arrived in the form of injuries to three of their own players. Yoshinori Muto, Jonjo Shelvey and Jamal Lascelles all retired hurt by the 51st minute, and on came three players who changed the game. Ultimately, Iosi Perez, who headed the winner from Ki Young-sung free kick, and Fabian Shaw, the centre-half, who perhaps made the biggest difference out of all of them, and that he was aggressive from the back. He put them on the front foot. He unsettled Watford's forwards. He drove the team forward. And ultimately, the crowd responded to that. And it was a tiny reminder of what St. James's Park can be like when all is working together as one, clearing supporters and management. And that second half, it really is it's a force of nature, St. James's, when it wants to be. And the crowd, the substitutes, the players, everyone together contributed to that victory. And it saw them scramble from the bottom three, and you come back to the word relief. It was a mighty relief thrown forward with Newcastle.
How key is that togetherness, Craig? Because throughout the season, there's been people questioning either Benitez's management or Mike Ashley's lack of investment in the club. And it seems to me that Benitez has been hamstrung by the lack of money, particularly in the transfer market. And he's doing as good a job as he possibly can with the resources he's been given.
Listen, when your players aren't, and it sounds crude, but when the players aren't that good, togetherness is absolutely key. If you look at Newcastle's success last season, it was built on organisation, team spirit, work rate, those sort of qualities, as opposed to moments of individual brilliance. And the Mastermind managed to finish 10th last year on the back of that. Now, going into this season, we go back to the end of last season. They finished 10th. I went into the boardroom with Lee Charnley, the chief executive, and we walked through the books in minute detail. We really did pore over all of the numbers. And I left that meeting thinking, wow, Newcastle's on a pretty sound financial footing here. There's no players on more than sort of £70,000, £80,000 a week. They've got a good wage structure. They've got a decent enough squad. They've got a world-class manager. and they've had a year of consolidating back in the Premier League. Now go and do it. Now go and prove yourself capable of competing in the top 10 financially. And for whatever reason, the reason was Rafa Benitez and Mike Ashley reached an impasse over the signing of the manager's new contract. And because of that, Ashley refused to release the funds he perhaps would have done otherwise. And we had this horrible situation, what we're so used to here on Tyneside, where as summer rumbles on to a backdrop of unrest, unease, managers grumbling to the press and all the rest of it. And we got to the start of the season where Rafa Benitez wasn't happy. The squad was clearly under strength. And lo and behold, they go 10 games without winning the football match. And it's the worst start in the club's top flight history. Mike Ashley recognises this. And the one thing Mike Ashley is motivated by is money and protecting what is the cash cow that is the membership of the Premier League. And he's acted upon this and he's returned to the club. He's been to 6 games on the bounce now. He's took the team out for a bonding meal. He's had discussions with Rafa about January. And listen, you can be as cynical as you want about Mike Ashley, and there's a hell of a lot to be cynical about, given his vandalism of the club, I always think is a good word to use, of the past 10 years. But in this instance, I think he's recognised that he needs to act. And ultimately, if Mike Ashley's getting back involved and is trying to build relations with players and with the manager, in the short term and in the isolation of this season, park your cynicism to one side. It can only be a good thing for the football club if they stay in the Premier League.
And they've managed to capture Jamal Lascelles for another 5 years as well, which is definitely seemingly good news for the club. And Lascelles made a remark about how Mike Ashley was a nice guy, which hasn't gone down that well with the hardcore Newcastle faithful. But that feels to me like it's been blown out of all proportion.
Yeah, massively, and you'd be right as well, Dave. I was in the room when you made that remark. I spoke to him then afterwards as well. And what you've got to remember about Jamal Lascelles, this is a 24-year-old young man. He's a young man, let's call him, who is captain of an absolutely huge football club, the youngest skipper in the Premier League. And he has come out and he's tried to do his best to sound a rallying cry, if you like, on the back of signing his new contract. And he was asked a question about the meal at the restaurant in Pontylon there with Mike Ashley. And hand on heart, I was there. I just think he gave an honest answer. If that's his only exposure to Mike Ashley during 2 hours over pizza and pasta and a bottle of wine, and he walked away and thought, you know what, he's not that bad. He's given an answer which is honest. Listen, it's naive. He probably... Rafa Benitez was asked the same question two days later, and Rafa Benitez said, I'm concentrating on the game, which is perhaps how Jamal Lascelles should have answered, although that in its own way would have created its own negative headlines, probably. But no, Jamal Lascelles is a young man who meant nothing but good by his comments. It was blown out of all proportion. And thankfully, when he did come to play on the Saturday against Watford, there was no negative reaction inside the stadium.
Very good. Let's move on now and talk about the Champions League, because we just had action Tuesday and Wednesday. We're recording this podcast on Thursday. Manchester City, clear favourites with William Hill to win the Champions League at 3-1. Barcelona 5-1. Juventus 11-2. Bayern Munich 9-1. PSG 9-1. Real Madrid 10-1. 12-1 and bigger the rest. Let's start with Liverpool's result, because it was a big shock. They went into Serbia full of optimism, expectation, and were beaten 2-0. Very short price for that match as well. But they've got Manchester City putting pressure on every single week in the league. Do you think there's a certain amount of fatigue in this Liverpool side?
Well, I know how short the price were, Dave. I backed them. Yeah, I've been to that stadium actually in Belgrade, the Red Stars Maracanã. I was there a couple of years ago for a World Cup qualifier. I think it was Republic of Ireland versus Serbia, and there was only about 8,000 to 10,000 in what is a 50,000-seat stadium, and it was a bizarre experience. It was raining very heavily as well, and I'd gone there. I was sort of brought up on the legend of that Red Star team of the early 90s and this wonderful stadium in Belgrade and how hostile and intimidating it could be. And I was while I was impressed by the stadium when I visited, I was a little disappointed by the atmosphere. And Ireland ultimately emerged with a 2-2 draw, and they probably could have even won the game after they took an early lead. So it wasn't the experience I was after. When I saw it was a sellout on Tuesday night, I think it was 50,000 in there. Yeah. I texted my colleague Dominic King, who was actually covering the game for the Mail out there, our Merseyside report, and just said, "Wow, that must have been some experience." And on the back of that, I wasn't at all surprised to see Liverpool come away with a defeat. It was a real... I watched the game as well, and it had a real old-fashioned Eastern European behind-the-curtain feel. It was quite refreshing to watch and enjoy, really, because those European nights in Europe have almost been rendered obsolete in recent years. All of the stadiums feel the same, almost a little bit plasticky, a little bit corporate-y, and you've seen teams go away to Eastern Europe, British teams, and fared relatively well. So in a strange way, although my money was riding on Liverpool, I was relatively pleased and relatively encouraged by the experience of watching the game. In terms of fatigue setting in, well, it's to Jurgen Klopp's credit, really, that he will play his best players week in, week out, but invariably it is going to lead to certain weeks where you get under par performances, and certainly Tuesday was one of them. And because of that, you look at Manchester City and the options they've got in terms of rotating. And what are we now? We're in sort of early November, and you're talking about sort of leg and tire performances. Well, yeah. That's only really going to get worse once we go through November and December into January. And perhaps then it'll be that we see the teams with the superior squads pull away.
I asked Derek on the podcast earlier, Craig, whether he thought it was just a blip for Liverpool. And he thinks it's maybe symptomatic of the way they've played this season so far. Those front three haven't quite gelled the same way they did last year. And I know Mo Salah's still scoring goals, but he's looked slightly subdued after that incredible debut season for Liverpool.
You know what? I'd argue that's almost a positive. The fact that this result and this performance has been coming, it's been in the post, so to speak, it's a good thing, because they haven't been great all season. Mo Salah has probably done better than he's been given credit for, but Firmino certainly isn't scoring the goals you would have thought of. They've been incredible at the back, but the point is they've been winning without playing well.
Yeah.
Now this performance was coming, so listen, when their guys do click, if they are sort of rotated and kept relatively fresh and they aren't sort of struck down by injury, then it'll be a wonderful thing. It really will be. I think it's a good thing that Liverpool haven't started the season firing on all cylinders as they were in the second half of last year, because the best is probably still to come. So I certainly wouldn't be looking at a negative. And do you know what? The fact that this defeat and this performance came in a game where they might just get away with it in terms of still being able to go through, that may not be no bad thing after all.
Spurs beat PSV Eindhoven 2-1, came from behind in that game with a couple of Harry Kane goals, just to keep their slim hopes of qualifying for the knockout stages intact. Mm. And it was good to see Harry Kane getting a couple as well, because I don't know your feeling on this, Craig, but I think he's dropped a little bit too deep this season for Spurs. Mm. And he's way more effective when he plays higher up the pitch, and you just want him in the box, don't you, Harry Kane?
You do. Well, that was even evident at the World Cup. I mean, he emerged with the golden boot without actually playing tremendously well. I know there was suggestion of him carrying a little bit of an injury after the Colombia game, but he was dropping too deep to get involved. But then, because England had so much pace, you had Lingard, you had Sterling, you had Rashford and all the other, Harry Kane didn't then have the pace to catch up with play once the other guys had sprung the break, really. And I take you back to, it was similar to Alan Shearer when Bobby Robson arrived at Newcastle. Shearer was doing all of his best work 40, 50 yards from goal with his back to goal. He was doing very well. He was bringing balls down. He was bringing in the fullback. He was bringing in the winger. But by the time the attack had expired, Alan Shearer was only just getting to the edge of the box. And the same seems sort of true of Kane. He's doing a lot of good work. You look at it, he gets the ball on halfway. Wonderful control. His ability to switch it wide or bring in Kieran Trippier or Danny Rose or whoever it may be. But his actual best work in the box, we're not really seeing that. So whether Bobby Robson isn't around now, but whether an Alan Shearer type needs to get hold of him and pass on the advice Bobby Robson gave to him and just say, listen, face the goal, get in the box, get back to what you are best at doing, and the goals will follow as well. Because certainly this season, even though he has answered the critics with goals like he always will do, you've got to believe your eyes. In watching Kane, I can't get myself away from the fact that he does look leggy, and he does look less like scoring than he has been previously.
And we'll finish this chat with a quick word on the two Manchester clubs who were in action on Wednesday night, starting with Manchester City beating up Shakhtar Donetsk. Won that game 6-0. And I suppose what's happening off the pitch is more interesting than what's happening on it with City at the moment, because they have looked sensational, City. In the league this season. They're top of the Premier League, and they are progressing serenely through the Champions League as well, Craig.
They are, yeah. I mean, with regards to the off-the-field issues, my colleague Martin Samuel wrote a brilliant article on it on Monday or Tuesday, I think it was, in which he said that FFP was ultimately to blame for this. And I was reading through it, and it ticked so many boxes for me. I finished reading the article, and I thought, you know what, they've done nothing legal here in terms of it's FFP is to blame for forcing Manchester City into these alleged misdemeanours.
Yeah.
But then you settle on it and you read articles two or three days later and you think, well, that's not the point. Manchester City have deliberately gone about breaking the rules, and whether they were left with no choice to do that or whether they were unfairly forced down that avenue doesn't really matter. So it'll be interesting to see how this one plays out. Absolutely. In terms of on the pitch, well, they're just fantastic, aren't they? They're brilliant. I still think they will be the team who ultimately will pull away from the chasing pack, the likes of Liverpool and Chelsea, over the next couple of months. In terms of the Champions League, I wouldn't have them as favourites.
No.
I've seen Juventus play twice this season, following Cristiano Ronaldo both times. I've seen them play live. And I was just blown away with them both times. Now, I know they were beaten by Manchester United last night, but I just think the second touch, the first touch is second nature, their organisation, the ability to score goals, the ability to defend their own goal. I couldn't have been more impressed by them the two games I've seen them play, which was Valencia away, the 2-0 victory, I think it was, when Ronaldo was sent off early on. And I saw them play a Serie A match as well in Udinese, when they were just sensational. It was so easy for them. So my money and my tip is Juventus this year. But no, certainly now, and that's a challenge for Guardiola, isn't it? You look at his record in the Champions League post Barcelona, and he's got one or two questions to answer there. So, no, I love watching them. I'd love to see them go all the way, but I certainly think Guardiola's got one or two questions to answer. As for Manchester United, the victory in Juventus, I watched that match, and I thought it was no coincidence that once Alexis Sanchez left the field, that the game turned to Manchester United's favour. I really do look at him as a player and just think, wow, you've gone. That spark, what made him so good and so fantastic to watch and such a game changer at Arsenal, it's just gone. It really has. And I don't know if you'll ever get that back. And I thought it was no coincidence that once he left the field, Manchester United appeared to have a little bit more urgency and a little bit more about them in the final third. And you didn't think you'd be saying that about Alexis Sanchez.
Yeah, and Romelu Lukaku to a certain extent as well, Craig, because he's been marginalised by Jose Mourinho recently, and Manchester United don't look any worse without him, let's put it that way.
With Lukaku, I find when you watch a team with Romelu Lukaku, they all of a sudden become a little more pedestrian, a little more predictable. You put the other guys in there, the likes of your Rashfords and your Martial, and you don't really know what's coming. They've got the ability to drop a shoulder, to beat a man, they can go left, they can go right, they can shoot, they can dribble, whereas Lukaku, you pretty much know what you're going to get. And when you couple Lukaku with what is a greatly diminished Alexis Sanchez, then I think Manchester United are the worst for it. Put in a Martial, a Rashford, a Juan Mata, and I think it brings out even more than the likes of Paul Pogba as well. And I think Mourinho somehow sort of stumbled upon this turnaround in form.
You have given us a tip for the Champions League, Juventus, to win it. I presume you'll be watching Newcastle at the weekend, will you, Craig?
Listen, I'll take you back 3-4 years. The very first time I was on this podcast, I gave you three aways, which came in at 100-1.
I can remember that, yeah.
Yeah, 100-1 treble I gave you, and the three of them came in. So go on, what do you want this time?
I tell you what I want. I want a prediction in Newcastle versus Bolt. I don't know, have you put an accumulator on yet this week, Craig, or is that later in the week?
I haven't yet this weekend, but I'll tell you what I'm doing. Every weekend, religiously, I'm following MK Dons, Portsmouth, Luton and Derby.
Okay.
Those are my four teams, and I've had a couple of touches this year, so I think if you follow those four, you don't go too far wrong.
What's going to happen in the game at St James's Park, Newcastle Bournemouth this weekend?
I think on the back of last weekend, I think there'll be a different atmosphere inside St James's from the off. The crowd responded to the team last week. I think this week the crowd will be up for it from the word go, given that they've got that victory already in the belt, and I think we'll see it. A home win, I think it'll be another narrow affair, but I'm going to go for 2-1. 2-1 to Newcastle.
Okay, Newcastle to win that game 2-1, available at 9-1 here with William Hill. That's Craig's tip for this weekend. Craig, it's always a pleasure speaking to you on this podcast. Thank you for your company.
Lovely. Anytime, Dave. Thank you.
Thank you, everyone that's tuned in so far. We're going to finish this podcast in the company of Pete Farries, Gav Pushlowski and Al Ross.
Hi, my name's Pete Farries, and in the Championship this week, there is one very clear, very lovely bet to nab. Norwich is 17-20 at home against Millwall. This, don't forget, is a Millwall side who in the Championship this season have not won away. This is a Millwall side who in their recent five away games have lost 2-0, 2-0, drawn 2-2 at Nottingham Forest, and then lost 3-1 and 2-0. Norwich are flying high. They're joint top of the Championship table. They've won four of their last five home games, including wins over Borough, Wigan, Villa and Brentford. For me, 17-20 is amazing, but I am going to get greedy. Race to 2 is 23-20, and while Norwich aren't scoring a huge amount of home goals, race to 2 for Millwall's opponents away from home this season would have landed in all but two away games. So 23-20, race to 2 for Norwich is my very clear nap of the week. Whatever you're backing, very best of luck. Let's head over to Gav Pushlowski and get his thoughts.
Round one of the FA Cup, so my challenge is to find the best price regarding a League One side. First thing I will say is I'm opposing Bradford at 13-10 away, Aldershot. Aldershot, the National League, home form good, 2-1. Bit of an upset there, methinks. I'm going for the home side. But I cannot ignore Accrington at 4-5 at home to Colchester. Colchester's away form in League Two is distinctly average. They're very solid at home, but they've got a tough trip to Accrington. Going to Accrington is a tough place to go for most League One sides, never mind League Two. But there will be goals in this game. Colchester United's away form in the FA Cup is quite astonishing. These are the last seven games. Bear with me. Lost 7-0, lost 4-0, won 4-1, lost 3-1, won 6-3, lost 3-1, won 6-2. That is Colchester United's away form, which is quite astonishing. I think over 4.5 goals has pretty much landed in 5 of 6 on their travels. So this could be an absolute goal fest. And Accrington standing at home, often winning 3-1, 2-1. So not only Accrington to win at 4-5, but my nap is Accrington standing to win and over 2.5 goals at 7-4. Looking at League Two sides in the first round of the FA Cup is Al Ross.
There's one fixture I could talk about with a bit of knowledge this week for the nap, because my team, York City, aren't getting anything at Swindon after the last few weeks, which have included a 3-0 thumping at a part-time side. Swindon 4-9 on the outright is good for an acca, but it's too short for me to nap in this pod, so instead, Exeter are a huge 11-5. If you're a history buff, you'll know Exeter and Blackpool have met seven times in the last 25 years, including in League Two last season, and the side listed as the home side has won six of the seven. But if you're not a history buff, you'll still know Exeter are going well in League Two, Blackpool are having a wobble in the league above. Is the next round of the Cup motivation enough to win this? Well, yes, of course, but is revenge for Exeter motivation? Really, yes. This is a replay of the playoff final at Wembley last year, which Blackpool won with just 36% possession. So give me a replay a few months later at Exeter's ground with Exeter 11-5, and I'm game.
Thank you, everyone, for tuning into the podcast. That is it. Make sure you check out all the betting at sports.williamhill.com and on the app, of course, ahead of the Premier League this weekend. A special thanks to our FWA guest, Craig Hope, the North East football correspondent, for his words on Newcastle and his reflections on the Champions League this midweek. Remember, you can check out this podcast and all William Hill's podcasts at audioboom.com. And finally, if you're having a bet on the football this weekend, the very best of luck.
William Hill is committed to responsible gambling. Visit gambleaware.co.uk for more information.